35 A, the Senate Insurance, Banking, and Retirement Committee. It's March 13th, hearing room C. The agenda is 31, SB 132, SB 150, 182, 404, 179.
Committee will come to order. The clerk will note those present. All others are excused.
Morning, Lynn.
Hello.
How are you this morning?
Well,
Cliff.
We do. We do. We do. We do. Do we have an amendment to 31?
31?
Yeah. We did. Mr. Bessonette, you want to start with 31, or would you rather wait?
As well shoot him down first.
Well, I won't say thank you, Mr. Mr. Vice Chairman. But I appreciate the opportunity to be first on this one. I had some amendments that I gave to the clerk to pass out for an effective date on this particular piece of legislation. She's passing them out now. Having checked with Frank Howitt of the Insurance Commissioner, he has some amendments to my amendments. Basically, we're doing the same thing. We're just applying the effective date of January 1, 1982. However, he feels that my language was not adequate.
Frank?
I have his...
Why don't you come up and sit next to Mr. Bessonette?
And I certainly yield to his superior style and form.
Well, in turn, Mr. Chairman, I'm yielding to the legislative council. I'm just copying what they do. Tom wants to make it clear that this doesn't apply to any contracts already in effect or that would be placed in effect before January 1st. That's a temporary provision and should be a separate section rather than, as Tom has indicated, a new subsection. And it just should say Section 2, the amendments to ORS 743789 by Section 1 of this Act shall apply only to policies issued on and after January 1st, 1982.
Okay. I know what we want to do. I just don't think it structurally is the way to
do it. All right. I'll finish writing it.
Yeah. Go ahead, Frank.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Is there any substantive change that is bothersome with this amendment, Mr. Hart?
No. It just... I think it is reasonable to have an easy January 1st changeover date for this kind of a new law. It gives the companies time to get their policy forms amended and
something that really adds to it. Chairman, I move the amendment in concept if you want to work on the form.
Sure. Senator Trill moves the amendment in concept, which is basically just an effective date for the new provision of January 182. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, it's adopted. What I would like to do is that, Frank, why don't you, instead of writing away like crazy, and listening to what you were talking about, I'm not satisfied with the language, and what I'd like to do is to go down to the Legislative Council and have them draft the amendment. The reason is that if you're going to put that in there, I think that the structure of Sub 2 may have to be a little different to pick up in the bill, so it's identified as a new section of the bill, the total part, so that and then we can add the effective date onto the new section, and then what will happen is after the session, Legislative Council, if it's written to the point, is added and made a part of ORS such and such, they will merge it together, and they can do that. But I think that to form and style, that they can probably do that a lot better.
Fine.
Is that okay?
Fine with me, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, yes. May I speak to that very point? I have no problem with that. In fact, I would appreciate it. I'd actually, there are times when we would like to take the amendments that have been somewhat endorsed by the committee to Legislative Council, but without specific instructions to do so, Legislative Council will not draft amendments for them.
The citizens. The staff will. I guess the thing is that it appears to me that when I read this last night, that the idea of underinsurance is a concept that we've seen to be merging with the existing statute. And I think that probably it's going to be better understood if it's put into a separate subparagraph in dealing with that.
Yes. I don't disagree, Mr. Chairman, but I do think there is some merit to linking it with the optional higher, the election of the optional higher amounts of uninsured motorists.
Mm-hmm.
Because without that election, there is no relevance of underinsured motorists.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that cares to testify on Senate Bill 31? I'll have that up next week and when the amendment's back, and it's my intention to put it out as soon as possible. Next bill up is Senate Bill 132. Mr. Bales?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Frank Bales, Deputy Director of Department of Retirement Services. We have no written testimony on this bill since we offered our written testimony approximately a month ago when this bill was first heard. Just to summarize, however, the purpose of this bill is to correct deficiencies in the state's tort liability and self-insurance program. The problem is the state cannot provide PIP coverage, personal injury protection coverage, on state vehicles used on official state business. And the purposes of this bill is to correct that deficiency. The consequences of that situation is that riders of state-owned vehicles, when used on official state business, have no health insurance benefits whatsoever other than whatever they may have personally. We feel this will correct that problem. We have worked with Mr. Bessonette and have discussed some proposed amendments with Mr. Nunez, and we delivered them to him yesterday. I would review through these, if you will. Mr. Chairman, we also provided you with a mock-up of what the amendments would do. However, the Xerox copy is rather dim, and it's hard to tell what is the boldface and which is the existing language. I have marked up a new copy of the bill for your convenience.
Here's the chairman. They're on the very last page. If you look at the packet of information, the amendments are the Department of General Service amendments.
On line 10, we're proposing.
Just a second, Frank. Okay. All the movement. Okay. We're with you now.
On line 10, we're proposing to insert the word or self-insurance following the word insurance. And following the word for, delete, or associated with. The purpose of this is that the connotation of the original proposal was that we might be venturing into physical damage, and this was not our intent. This clarifies that issue.
Okay, so the members, we can see it on a mock-up bill, is on line 10, after the word insurance, you want to insert
or
self-insurance, and then on line 10, you want to delete the phrase "are associated with."
That is correct.
So it will read now, to provide insurance or self-insurance for the operation of motor vehicles within the state or public body's control.
Right. Required now, for.
Frank, let me ask you that. This section, 278-100, that implies to all public entities, does it not?
Yes.
It doesn't just apply to the state?
Yes, all entities.
All entities. So this changed.
But primarily the state.
Yeah. But I mean, when the statute's changed, you're basically making a change that's effective on all public entities. Get statute, 278-100. The reason I say that is because I notice that the state, within the state, are public bodies control.
Well, this 278-100 is essentially the state establishes a state liability fund.
Okay.
But it applies to the public jurisdictions to the extent that they participate in the state public liability program.
Go ahead.
Later on, we will see something that does affect all of the other entities. On line 19, we're proposing to insert, following the word coverage, or personal injury protection benefits. And on line 20, deleting 743-795 and inserting 743-835. Now, the thought there is that if there should be a need for higher than minimum coverage for both uninsured motorists or personal injury protection, the local jurisdiction should be able to take advantage of that.
Does this conform to the bill that we passed just yesterday in the Senate?
No, it does not. And I wanted to indicate to you that this was in difference to that. So these two bills will have to be reconciled if they both should pass.
Okay, now tell the committee what the difference is. I mean, is it at here or someplace later that the conflict exists? The bill is, Senator Kitzhaber just carried it. It's Senate Bill 54. If you'll look, could you pull it out of your book? Would you just pull Senate Bill 54 out of the books for the members? Go ahead, Frank, and then I'll come back to that.
Okay. On line 26, we're proposing to delete the bracket, and on line 27, delete the bracket to restore the original language of the existing statute.
Why is that?
You mean leave in against liability of the state of Oregon?
That is correct.
And its officers, agents, and employees.
Because we felt there was some uncertainty that we were removing our one of the basic tenets of that section, and that the purpose of the liability fund is to ensure the public officers and employees. On page 2.
Yes, Senator Troll.
Yeah. What would you think if on line 17 we struck at least the minimum and shall provide reasonable coverage or adequate coverage or substantial coverage or something like that to get away from just doing the minimum?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Frank.
Senator Troll, I'm not quite sure what reasonable would be.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, I guess we know what minimum is. But what is at least?
At least minimum.
No less than.
Yeah, no. In other words, it's going to be minimum. That's what we're probably going to get. But if it's a little bit better, why, you can say it's a little bit better.
Frank, while we're on that subject, can I ask you a question? As I read that, starting on line 18, it says, however, at the request of the local public body, the department may provide uninsured motorist coverage or personal injury protection benefits for the motor vehicles owned by the local public body. The way I read that is the way it's literally written, you could provide either uninsured motorist or PIP coverage. And I thought you were already required to have uninsured motorist coverage.
We are. That's under 278-215. This allows coverage in excess of the minimums.
No. I'm on line 18 and 19. It appears that, let me ask you first, that you're required to provide uninsured motorist coverage already under the current law.
Yes.
But you've added the word or personal injury protection benefits, and it reads almost is that if you can provide one or the other, you don't have to provide both. And I don't think that's what you intend. What you intend is the existing law already requires you to provide uninsured motorists, and you just want to be able to provide PIP coverage on top of that. Isn't that the purpose of the bill?
That is correct. But on lines 18 and 19, this allows us to provide to the local jurisdictions at their request coverage in excess of the minimums.
Mm, I see.
Oh, okay.
The end
I
of
the
sentence
read the full
says
sentence.
The amount's
okay.
Greater than.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. Go ahead.
Go to page 2 then.
Yes, go ahead.
On line 1, we're proposing to delete, following the word the, uninsured motorists, and delete in the same line 743, 7889, and the rest of that line, and insert 743, 786 to 743, 835, and there should be a period following that. The thought there is that we were tying ourselves down to only uninsured motorists, only PIP, personal injury protection, and if you pass the underinsured bill, we would probably need to come back 2 years hence and get authority to do that. Assuming that the underinsured bill will fall in within this statute range, we have cited the entire range of statutes that apply to uninsured motorists and personal injury protection.
Mr. Chairman, then would you delete line 2 also?
Then line 2 deletes in total.
Yeah, okay.
Then in line 4, we're suggesting to delete the, or restore the bracketed language. And in line 6, following ORS, we're suggesting delete 743-789 and insert 743-786 to, and that's the full range of the uninsured motorist statute. And then, following the word and, insert may provide the personal injury protection benefits required under ORS 743. This makes parallel wordage with the earlier section that the option on personal injury protection coverage for local jurisdictions is optional. Under the existing statute, this would continue to be optional under this proposed statute. Then in line 7, we're suggesting delete and 743-805 and insert to 743-835, which provides the full range of the personal injury protection statute. Then in line 8, we're proposing to delete the new language and personal injury. And in line 10, also delete the same thing. The thought there is that the present law provides that the uninsured motorist coverage is excess over other remedies. This would continue that same policy, but would put us in a primary position on personal injury protection. And this was one of the things we were discussing with Mr. Bessonette, that we feel that state vehicles on personal injury protection should be have the same kinds of coverages that every other vehicle on the highway should have, and should have the same kind of liabilities, same kinds of obligations, and this bill would accomplish that.
I got it.
And then we would propose to add a new Section 4, which would be an emergency clause to make the bill effective July 1, 70 or 81.
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Yes. In your opening remarks, you said this will cover when a state employee is on official business. When is a state employee driving an auto when he is not on official business?
I don't think it's possible. Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry I gave the wrong implication on that.
Yeah, you said that.
Yes. The law now reads that we may provide personal injury protection when a vehicle is used for public use. Public use has been sort of defined for us by the Attorney General to include such applications as Department of Transportation-owned vehicles that are actually in the possession of senior centers and are used for the transportation of senior citizens. Those vehicles, when they are insured under the state self-insurance program, do not have PIP coverage, or personal injury protection coverage. So, state, in direct statement to your, or direct answer to your question, Senator, state vehicles are not used for other than official purposes, but there's a distinction between official purposes and general public use.
Okay, and there's no way to cover the general public use?
Yes, there is.
Okay, I'm still mixed up.
Senator.
So I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Don't take any more time.
Senator Trump.
We just mentioned, I think, other governmental jurisdictions and units that might be affected by the bill. Does this in any way require school districts, let's say, to have this kind of coverage? What local unit of government does it additionally affect besides state government?
Subsection 2, Mr. Chairman, of Section 3, which is ORS 278215, speaks to the local jurisdictions that would self-insure. We are proposing that that continue to be optional on the part of the local jurisdictions.
Okay. So it wouldn't have any substantial change for them. It's optional with them.
That is correct.
Senator Hannah.
Why is the July 1st effective date on the emergency clause? Is this for your new budget year, so you can anticipate this as an expenditure?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hannon, we wanted this effective as soon as we possibly can because we have a lot of very troubled people out there that are desiring coverage.
Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion that we delete the July 1st date and insert effective upon its passage.
There's a Senator Hannon, before I take your motion, what I'd like to do is that we passed a bill just yesterday, I think, or 2 days ago, that Senator Kitzhaber carried. And it had to do with, and you have it before you. I brought it in at Senate Bill 54. And if you remember, it had to do with ride sharing and allowing and the PIP coverage for ride sharing programs. If you look at Senate Bill 54, Section 1 that begins on line 4, it amends ORS 278205, which is the same section that Senate Bill 132 on page 1, line 14, also amends. And they're crossing, and I'm just trying, before I take your amendment, Senator Hannon, I want it understood that exactly what type of position we're going to be in if, in fact, that both of these bills pass, because Senate Bill 54 did not have an emergency clause on it, as I understood. And I guess that on ride-sharing programs, I don't see any difference in ride-sharing programs than I do the necessity for it than the general liability. I mean, I think the situation exists the same thing. I mean, the same problem that you're concerned about, Frank. And I guess what I'm trying to figure out is maybe if we can just get legislative counsel to take 54, it's the same clause. I mean, it's germane, and just take 54 and put it into 132. Or any alternatives, and since the Senate Bill 54 is already in the House, is to go over there and just take 132 and put it in that one and have an emergency clause on it. Do you have a preference? I don't think 54 is objectionable. I don't think anybody objects to it.
Do you have an opinion? Mr. Chairman, we discussed these issues with legislative council when we were in our concept stage. We were advised by them to not confuse our concept, so we knowingly had some duplicated kinds of amendments to a given bill, because here we're talking about PIP coverage for state vehicles, and that's our major thrust, and there we're talking about primarily a ride-sharing program. But I don't think there'd be any difficulty in reconciling those two. In fact, we were rather torn about how to handle that when we were trying to put together amendments, whether we should try to keep this in such a form that those other changes could be enveloped into this.
Frank, what I'm concerned about is an example. I'm looking at Senate Bill 54, and I'm looking, committee members, on page 1, lines 17 through 21. And if you will look at Senate Bill 132, the identical section appears at the beginning on page 1, line 20 through 23 through 24, and they're deleting that language from the statute.
Yes.
Certainly need to be reconciled.
Yeah, it just makes it difficult for us to run these out there, and if they're not together. And I guess that let me ask this, since I have no firm opinion. Would the members rather have staff, and I will go with them when the bill is, Senate Bill 54 is assigned to the House. I'm assuming this is going to go to the Judiciary Committee in the House, and have it sent. We'll take 132 over there, and I will explain the problem with them and see what they do before I let the bill go, and then tell them that they should have an emergency clause tacked on it. Would you have any objections to that, Frank?
No. As long as we get our insurance authorization.
And what's nice about it is maybe they'll feel some impetus to get the ride-sharing bill out also at the same time.
I think we'd appreciate your assistance in that regard.
Do you want to amend the bill?
Yes. Why don't I amend the bill with the amendments that Mr. Bales has provided already.
I'll
move those. Senator Troll moves the amendments that have been submitted from the Department of General Services. You have any further discussion? Any objection? Senate Bill 132 is amended.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
These amendments have not been reviewed by council, and there may be a technical problem or two in terms of...
Don't worry. I'll pick it up. I'm quite sure, Mr. Bessonette, somebody's just giving you something. Do you have another note? Mr. Bessonette, do you understand what everything they've done?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do.
Do you have any...
No objections.
Is Mr. Hollett here? He left. What I, Frank, you understand what I'm going to do?
Yes.
Would you get it? I'd ask counsel to draft a letter for my signature that informs the Speaker of the House about Senate Bill 54 and find out exactly where it is that it's going to be sent. And if you will keep me and tell them that we have a bill that basically we think should be amended into it, and find out where it's at, and I will go talk to the chairman of that committee. Is there anyone else that cares to testify on Senate Bill 132? Hearing none, I'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 132. Is there anyone from the Department of Environmental Quality here on Senate Bill 404? Senate Bill 404, I might inform the members, was the
Roto-Rooter bill.
The Roto-Rooter bill of this session, and what I wanted to find out from the DEQ is if they how they felt about having that type of arrangement. Hold it back.
Yeah.
I'll just take that off since there's no one signed up on it. Is there anyone here to testify on Senate Bill 404? Okay, that would be done.
Okay.
Senate Bill 150. Mr. Epley. do me a favor. Can you take the gold board, get a copy of it, and send it to Bill Young and tell me what the hell he thinks about it? Tell him that we made a request that they appear, and I do not like it. And I, when the committee asks one of the agencies to have somebody here, that they don't show up. Go ahead, Mr. Epley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Don Epley. I'm the administrator of the Personnel Division, Executive Department. I've already testified before this committee. I really have nothing more to add. I'm more interested in giving you some extra information on Senate Bill 182, but we'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Let me get them both together. Let me take 150 first, Don.
I recognize, Mr. Chairman, that we signed up for both of these bills. I just don't feel I need to be redundant and waste the committee's time.
Just a second. Okay, so the committee members understand that if we could.
If you pass this bill, you can't.
But if you pass this bill, that's what you're saying. I can't. I go into, automatically will go on to PERS.
Yes, sir.
And settle for whatever PERS is doing for retired folks, right?
You understood that previously, Ms. Bradley.
What kinds of, don't you think that a lot of employees that are approaching retirement are going to be fairly resentful at suddenly going from pretty good coverage to not so good coverage? Just as they're approaching the time of life when they're probably going to need more coverage?
You asking for an opinion?
Yeah. What do you think? How would you feel?
Exactly the same way as I think you feel.
All right. Who cares?
Huh? Yeah. Let me ask you a couple questions so I understand this. First of all, the health care plan that's provided by the state does distinguish between active and retired members.
That's a good point.
You do not have a general overall plan that when an individual retires that he or she stays under that plan. But you have another plan that you've contracted for that has an experience rating and a cost specific for retirees. Is that correct?
The retirees under age 65 are really experience rated with the active employee.
That's what I want to... So the plan that they pay for before age 65 is the general plan that's available to all public employees.
That's correct.
Yeah. And it's when they reach 65... that there's a separate category for them where they have their own experience rating and they have a different policy. Now, I don't want to upset you two gentlemen, but your attorney is shaking his head this way and you're shaking your head this way. And I'm going to give him a chance to explain all this. Mr. Holscher, you just stay right there. Now, so I understand that. The other thing is, as it relates to the three different boards, the three different benefit boards and the policies that they provide are basically on the bidding as to which contracts you've accepted as for the coverage for those people. I mean, I originally thought that initially that what was happening is that the sub was being more concerned about their employees than Bub was and retirement board, but it's basically the policy that you have the dollars to buy for retired members. And that's the disparity between retirees being able to provide, have coverage under Bub, Sub, or PERS. Isn't that what it is? There's nothing inherent in the system that says Sub is going to have better benefits because they're representing a certain class of employees. It's just the contract and the bidding of what you buy. Okay.
Now, this year, the attorney back here made me stop, but this year they're proposing that absolutely the
retirees under 65 be placed in a separate category on our bidding this time.
So that will put the bill up, if they're going to have a separate, just like the over 65, that even ups that. So they're milking the system, really. Because actually, a good policy has to should have a mix, and you know that. And why would you let them take the over 65 and put them in a different category? I mean, you should tell them what you want and try to put it out for bid, but always basically having the mix. I
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go right ahead.
May I answer, Senator? We put it out for bid. We received one bidder on that contract, Blue Cross of Oregon.
Okay.
None of the other 46 of the largest carriers in the United States would bid on it except Blue Cross of Oregon.
That sounds strange to me.
No, you know what it is that carriers are just like any other business. They want all the good, and none of them want to carry the high-risk people. And what they do is that where the problem is, and it's a policy decision, is when you separate retirees from the active members, you run into that, you run that risk because these are the high-risk people. And the only way you can compensate for that is if you want to adopt a policy that the retirees are included in the rating for the overall plan, and then what you end up do for the active members as well, then you have the active members subsidizing the retirees. And that's a policy decision the legislature makes. A number of labor organizations do that, you know, with their health plans. They basically spread the risk out over all the members, active and retirees, and basically argue to them that when you retire, someone's going to be subsidizing you, and that's the justification for you to pay an increased premium today to take care of the retirees. Is that correct, Mr. Ethel?
Yes, very well stated.
And that's just basically what happens. So.
But everybody ought to be put.
Bill, you're going to get your chance, so don't ask now. I want you to be quiet.
No, but
I mean it very seriously, because this is exactly what I am mad about what the board did, because you are going to be sitting there shaking your head one thing, and these people who are the administrators of the program and deal with this are going to be talking about something else, and I am not going to have every damn time that the lawyer disagrees that you're going to override these people. Now, I'm going to get that straight. And we're going to get that clarified as to who's going to speak for the retirement system, who's going to speak for all these bills. Because I've thought about it. The more I've thought about it, I think it's a lousy decision that the board, and we're going to get that clarified very clearly, who's going to speak.
Mr. Chairman.
Nothing with you, gentlemen.
Question now. If we're talking about we want to direct you that your retirement system has to have a mix in with the people who are not retired, then neither of these bills address it.
That's correct.
That's right.
These are not the bills to pass if we want you to do that.
That's correct. Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead, Doc.
Senator McFarland, at the moment, State Employee Benefit Board, if it had the courage, speaking candidly, could on its own elect not to cover retirees. There is no statute that says that we have to. So if you wished for us to and didn't want us to wiggle out ever, then we would need a separate bill that would mandate it.
Yeah, well,
not either one of these, but a different one.
Yeah. Right.
That's what we have to do.
Senator McFarland.
Yeah.
Senator Troll.
Yeah. Well, I guess I would like to know, because I think it really makes a difference. If we're going to go this route, we're going to let Seb and Bub off the hook for these folks, and PERS is going to pick up all the retired folks, I want to know what PERS can do for them. Are they going to be able to do anything that's better than they're now doing for the retired people who really don't want to go there because they get a better deal with Seb and Bub, or are they going to be able to do something for those people?
Mr. Chairman, as far as I know, PERS can buy whatever insurance contract they think is in the best interest of their membership or those people that they're representing, just as Seb and Bub can do.
Well, I guess we need to talk to PERS and see what they will, in fact, do for those folks.
Yes.
And they're here, aren't they?
Mr. Holscher's going to be right up here. Don, I take it that you would argue that basically, if in fact that 182 passes, that will put all the retirees in the system under the retirement board. And in essence, because it's a larger group, so you could actually get a lower rate and better coverage.
Yes, sir.
And what's happening now is that you've got each of the benefit boards with select small groups, and when you crank out the retirees into a separate group, because of the number, it just is extremely expensive as long as you keep them separated.
Right. Mr. Chairman, at the moment, the State Employee Benefit Board covers about 2,000 retirees. Bargaining Unit Benefit Board covers about 2,000 retirees, and PRS covers another 8,700. My speculation is that the 2,000 that are staying with Seb and Bub probably have more critical medical problems than the 8,700 with PERS, and they're choosing to pay a higher premium with us so that they get some extra coverages for illnesses that they are already known to them. If you can mix that group, I'm not saying that necessarily there'll be lower rates, but we will have a common group that can have a plan design around their needs.
You know, what's interesting about this whole discussion is it's the individual retiree that's paying the premium. It's just the market that he has to choose from to pay what program that he's going to have available to him. And the only reason they stay under sub is sub has a better plan. It doesn't mean that PERS couldn't have the same plan as sub did.
That's correct.
And that they would be able to take their dollars there.
That's correct.
They do the bargaining. That's right.
Yeah. But it seems like maybe we've got too many of these boards, and we ought to put them all under PRS.
We might even look into the possibility of having a state-insured program.
One last question, Don. Would it be, at least for state employees, there are no state retirees, whether under 65 or over 65, who are having their health care benefits paid for by the state?
That's correct.
And no matter what it comes down to, at the very bottom line, is the retirees are paying for their own health care plan. Yes.
Except to a small degree, the 4% that Bolt was talking about, where the actives really have some subsidy in that because they're lumped together. But by and large, that is absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
William, you're on.
Before you let these nice people get away.
No, I'm going to have you come up. And we're going to have Mr. Liebrich and everybody else come up.
This issue involves these people as well. That's
fine. Okay. We're going to get them all up here. Go ahead, Don.
Thank you.
Thank you. William, I recognize that they were not speaking for the board, and they were speaking for themselves. And
Mr. Chairman, I'm William F. Holscher, Assistant Attorney General and Counsel. I apologize for irritating the chairman and other members of the committee. Let me explain why I was sort of anxious that we join in with the testimony with Mr. Epley and Mr. Bolt.
But you know, Bill, before you start, it's just like the judges always say, now, counsel, you have your statement, and you let him have his statement. And you don't let them sit there and argue with each other. And that's all I was trying to get to you.
I understand.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wingard.
Well, I think that's what's wrong with the judicial system. When I used to run a committee, the only way I could learn anything was to try to pick out the liar. And I could do it much better when they didn't have a chance to be alone. And I'm talking philosophy now.
No. Senator Wingard, I'm assuming that we all have good memories and we all remember what Mr. Epley said and what the other witness said. And when these gentlemen speak, that the committee members are going to finally say, gosh, they're saying two different things. And then we can all get them back up here and to work it out. And I'm not convinced that they're really saying different things as much as it is as to an understanding, a perspective that they have. Bill, go right ahead.
If I could just comment to the senator, sometimes I felt I would like to try a case around a big round table, you know, rather than have each witness.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've got to answer just one second.
The trouble with intelligent people is they always give too much credit to other people. I don't have that good a memory, so I need him right there, right now.
But, George, that's why you have an office next to me. Rely upon me.
Believe in me.
Trust me. Go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Don Epley, in addition to being the administrator of personnel for the state, is the chairman of the State Employees Benefits Board. By prearrangement, he is also a member of the, a management member of the Bargaining Unit Benefits Board. I am the attorney of the State Employees Benefits Board, and by prearrangement, I am also a member, a management member of the Bargaining Unit Benefits Board. In addition, of course, I'm an attorney for the Executive Department and the Public Employees Retirement System.
That antitrust violation?
No, it's not. It's trying to coordinate the interests of these two groups to a common purpose.
It would be if he weren't in the Attorney General's office.
Okay, William.
Now,
you have your say.
The State Employees Benefits Board, of course, has always provided all the health and welfare coverage for all the state employees, and as Mr. Epley pointed out to you, there's not one word in that statute authorizing it to provide any health and welfare benefit for retired members. They've done so, however, and done so very well. The retirees pay their premium without any employer contribution, as do the that is given to active employees, but the premium that the retirees pay is the same as the active employees, and since it costs more to provide them coverage, they're getting a subsidized health and welfare plan. And the subsidy is coming from the current employees, not from the state. It's coming from the state in the sense that the state makes a certain maximum monthly contribution to active employees, and so that money is being used up. But it essentially comes from the active employees who pay the same rates as the retirees. Now, the difference between age 65 and under age 65 is to have the Medicare supplement, and so the plan changes at that point in time. Last session, when we did the PERS pickup, we did that essentially to gain the maximum tax advantage under the Internal Revenue Code, and we converted the PERS essentially from an employee contribution plan to an almost totally employer-paid plan. In order to gain the maximum tax advantage. Now, it's possible to gain exactly the same tax advantage by having whatever contribution is made toward retirees' health and welfare made by the retirement system, because it's then tax-free. Or said another way, if you're going to subsidize retirees' health and welfare plans, instead of giving the retirees an ad hoc retirement increase of some sort on which they pay income tax, you can simply make a certain contribution to their health and welfare, and that's tax-free. And so it's the best use of dollars for these people. Now, the question of whether you keep your retirees in three different groups, that is SEB and BUB and PERS, has a double aspect. One aspect is, of course, that if you can get the biggest group of employees together, hopefully you get the best policy to cover them. The second is that you don't want employees to or any insurees to select against the plan. So if you have no contribution by anybody to this insurance, the retirees who tend to take the insurance are those who need it the most. Those who don't need the insurance don't buy it because it's expensive. But once the retirement system or the employer begins to contribute toward a retiree plan, they all want to take it in order to get that contribution. And once you have them all, then you have the best group to sell to an insurance company. Now, by happenstance or otherwise, the CNA, the Continental Insurance Company, has been the insurance company for the retirees under the PERS for many years. And when they bid and secured the bid for the BUB, we now have the same insurance company insuring active members and retirees under BUB and retirees under the PERS. It's only the SEB that has a different carrier at this stage so far as retirees are concerned. The unions, I'm quite sure because of my conversation with them, take the same attitudes that you all take, and that is you're not going to let your retirees hang out to dry. If they're going to be transferred from SEB and BUB, where they are currently being subsidized by the active employees, then some subsidy is going to have to be provided for them. Otherwise, it would have a dramatic loss in benefit, or at least they'll have an increase in premium cost.
Bill, those are the retirees under 65 who are being subsidized.
Well, they're both being subsidized.
Over 65?
Over 65, the Medicare supplement is not the total coverage. Mm-hmm. That's just a premium you pay to the federal government to get the Medicare portion, and we also provide insurance at the low end. That's why I didn't want Ralph Bolt to leave, because I really don't understand the details of the insurance coverages, and I don't think you should be concerned with it either, because we can change those coverages at will. The issue is, where are these retirees to be covered, and are they to pay all their own premium, or are we to subsidize them in some way?
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
Yes, I mean, I think that that's not really correct to say that they are being subsidized. That's not really correct. They are part of an experience, a mix. That's what they are, and it's not, they're not being subsidized any more than the people who are young and whatnot.
No quarrel with that.
Yes.
No quarrel with that.
But I mean, that's sort of a...
Let me tell you how the subsidy theory arises, Senator. If we take them out of 7 BUB and we put them into the PERS and we ask some insurance company to cover them, the premium is suddenly dramatically greater than it was under 7 BUB. Not because the company is attempting to unduly enrich itself, but rather it costs more to provide coverage.
Yes, because you separate them out. You separate them out and put them in their own experience instead of having them experienced over the general hall.
Are you telling me that the sub and bub do not have a special group for retirees in classification?
Special rate?
No, a grouping. I mean, the retirees on the sub and bub are included in the general overall active employee plan?
That is my understanding.
Go ahead.
What was the question?
You know, what the question is what, let's say sub. Do you have a separate classification for retirees, for SEB? I call it sub. SEB. For SEB. Are the retirees included in the classification with the active employees for determining a rate?
Yes, sir.
Both under 65 and over 65.
The over 65 is separated.
Ralph, can I ask this question? When a retiree reaches age 65, his premium, his coverage is less because part of his coverage is going to come from Medicare.
Yes. His or hers.
His or her. Thank you, Senator. The employee pays that Medicare premium directly to Medicare, or do you pay it?
No, the retiree has any premium deducted from his Social Security check, that is the Medicare portion of it.
Right. Now, the coverage that you provide in addition to Medicare, that is, when added to Medicare, is the same coverage as your other employees receive. If you add Medicare together with the coverage that you provide supplementally, then they have a total amount of coverage that is approximately the same as other employees.
Approximately the same.
And the premium that they pay is only the difference between the Medicare premium and the regular premium. They don't have a special retiree premium. It's special in the sense that it only applies to people who are under Medicare.
In that class.
But it's still a subsidized premium in the sense that it's into the mix, is it not?
At the end of the year, it's in the mix. Because if they've lost in that group of employees, the active employees are subsidizing. See, we're talking about two different things, and I'm just confusing the issue, I guess, because as far as the rates are set by experience, but it's kind of at the end of the year that we pool all of the losses and the surpluses, and we're paying for it. The active employees might be getting a lower premium had it not been from the retiree losses.
No,
Senator McCoy.
Mr. Chairman, that's not correct either. Look, any insurance company, as I understand it, they might have, it doesn't make any difference if you had all people 35 years of age in it, up to 35 years of age, and they're all working. They still might have a loss at the end of the year. You still might have a loss. So that isn't any, that's not like saying just because there were older people in it, it was being subsidized. It's because of the whatever happens during the year. So, I mean, when you say that at the end we subsidize the older people, I don't understand that.
Senator, the national statistics say that someone who is retired or over age 65, commonly used that terminology, will use 2.5 times more in claims than the person under 65. They're more susceptible to using the policy and getting benefits.
I understand that, but wouldn't that spread over the whole? Oh, well.
Maybe I am wrong.
Okay, this isn't going to be the last time this is up. Mr. Holscher, will you come up and sit down? And just Senator, no, I want you. Senator Troll wants to ask you a question.
I wanted to get at something you were saying, because it seems to me that if we find the principle, the ultimate motivation behind these bills and making this change is that you want some kind of a chip in the collective bargaining process so that you can give less money in the way of salary increases and substitute this. Is that right?
Well, we don't bargain for retired employees.
You're bargaining for active employees.
Yes.
What you're going to be able to say to them, if you can make this change, is we're going to pick up your health insurance part, and that's going to have the same effect as last time when you picked up your PERS contributions. You're going to get something in terms of tax benefits that's going to be greater than if we gave you money instead of it, because you have to pay taxes on it, right?
It's true, Senator.
It's a bargaining chip.
Yes.
Which will allow you, with less money in the kitty, to give people more than what looks like a 6% increase or whatever they're going to get. And that's the primary motive behind these bills.
Well, Senator, I want you to answer this question.
All right, I'm trying.
Okay.
Oh, this
one? I want you to look at this.
Okay.
Seb has 22.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Have you answered my question?
Well, let me say it this way, because I'm not sure what the question is, Senator.
You don't understand my question? I understand it.
I'm trying, Senator. We contribute at the moment on behalf of the state to the SEB and the BUB, roughly speaking, $70 a month per employee on the average. Those dollars go in part to retirees because of the subsidy that we've talked about. If we took the retirees out of those dollars would go further, and the employees may ask us for fewer dollars this coming biennium. That's a bargaining consideration.
It's a bargaining, yeah. In other words, you're saying
yes
to my question.
Yes, sir, I think I am.
Okay, I got it.
If I understood what was stated earlier, there are about 22,000 active employees under SEB, and they have 2,000 retirees. Both groups have a health care plan available to them. The 22,000 have the plan paid for by the employer as a benefit. The 2,000 are the retirees, and they pay for their own. First question.
Yes, Dr.
Are the cost? Oh, go ahead.
That isn't accurate. Okay. Each plan, BUB and SEB, have several different insurance plans. You can take CNA under BUB, you can take HMO under BUB, you can take Capital Health Care, you can take Klamath Falls, you know.
And the employee gets to choose.
They get to choose. And the employer under 7 BUB contributes up to $70 a month on the average for each active employee, but nothing for the retirees. Okay. The premiums differ depending on the plan that you choose, and depending whether you're single or whether you're married. And so for an active employee, he picks a plan, and he knows at least the first $70 of that premium is going to be paid by the employer. When a retiree picks a plan, he pays the whole premium. The premium is less than it would be if he was in PERS without any subsidy. But he pays his whole premium, as it shows up on the books.
Okay. In determining that premium for the retiree, those 2,000 people, when the carrier looks at that group, and I understand it's Blue Cross was said.
That's the main carrier.
For retirees?
Yes, sir. Both.
For both? Is Blue Cross establishing a premium for the retirees based upon the experience rating of 24,000 people or just the 2,000?
24,000.
Your illustration, we may have 1,000 of those 2,000 that are in groups under age 65. 1,000 of them may be over 65. Actually, they would have for 23,000.
Okay, because of the...
They would also put a little figure in there that 1,000 of those are retirees under age 65 who are going to take out more out of the policy than they put in. And they're going to program that in their actuarial and underwriting statistics.
And Mr. Holscher's statement that he keeps using about subsidizing is basically what the argument is that the 22,000 active employees are in essence subsidizing the 1,000, and you calculate that at the end of the year as to what that subsidy is. Okay, I understand it now.
The active employees are paying a higher rate because the retirees are in there. Can I make two more comments, yeah, and then I'll shut up and turn this over to Ken Maul, the deputy director of the PERS, and Jerry Liebritz of the PERS?
Before I forget, Bill, that's the same thing that's done with Bub and retirement. Everybody does it.
Yes.
Okay.
The two comments I wanted to make are, one, that when the Bub Act was written, it was recognized we had these retirees, even though the SEB Act was silent. And so the Bub Act says that Bub will take with it, when it takes employees out of SEB, an equal number or an appropriate number of retirees, because otherwise we would have left all the retirees in SEB and taken active employees into Bub. So we split the retirees up depending upon whether they retired from OSCA or not. The last comment is, this issue that we're dealing with here really is a question of what do you want to do or not do for local government employees and not state employees. We can leave things exactly as they are and continue to take care of state employees. It's the local government employees who are in PERS without any sort of subsidy at all.
I think that's 182, but I think 150 basically applies to all the employees. If you have the employers pick up one half of the contribution. I read that bill and apply to state employees as well.
Yes, sir, but I meant to say that if you didn't pass 150, we could continue to take care of our retirees under SEB and Bub, and it would, you know, things go on like they are.
That's true. Yes, Senator Hannock.
Bill, I want to ask you before you leave. 1979,